I'm your boogeyman. That's what I am. And I'm here to do whatever I can. KC and the Sunshine Band. Do you love? Introduction. Wait just a few minutes. I want to talk to you. And then I'm going to kiss you. Wait. One. Here's some more short stories, if you want them. They span a long period of my life. The oldest, The Reaper's Image, was written when I was 18, in the summer before I started college. I thought of the idea, as a matter of fact, when I was out in the backyard of our house in West Durham, Maine, shooting baskets with my brother. And reading it over again made me feel a little sad for those old times. The most recent, The Ballad of the Flexible Bullet, was finished in November of 1983. That is a span of 17 years, and does not count as much, I suppose, if put in comparison with such long and rich careers as those enjoyed by writers as diverse as Graham Greene, Somerset Maugham, Mark Twain, and Eudora Welty. But it is a longer time than Stephen Crane had, and about the same length as the span of H.P. Lovecraft's career. A friend of mine asked me a year or two ago why I still bother. My novels, he pointed out, were making very good money, while the short stories were actually losers. How do you figure that? I asked. He tapped the then-current issue of Playboy, which had occasioned this discussion. I had a story in it, Word Processor of the Gods, which you'll find in here someplace, and had pointed it out to him with what I thought was justifiable pride. Well, I'll show you, he said, if you don't mind telling me how much you got for the piece. I don't mind, I said. I got $2,000, not exactly chicken dirt, Wyatt. His name isn't really Wyatt, but I don't want to embarrass him, if you can dig that. No, you didn't get $2,000, Wyatt said. I didn't? Have you been looking at my bank book? Nope. But I know you got $1,800 for it, because your agent gets 10%. Damn right, I said. He deserves it. He got me in Playboy. I've always wanted to have a story in Playboy, so it was $1,800 instead of $2,000. Big deal. No. You got $1,710. What? Well, didn't you tell me your business manager gets 5% of the net? Well, okay, $1,800 less $90. I still think $1,710 is not bad for... Except it wasn't, this sadist pushed on. It was really a measly $855. What? You want to tell me you're not in a 50% tax bracket, Steve-O? I was silent. He knew I was. And, he said gently, it was really just about $769.50, wasn't it? I nodded reluctantly. Maine has an income tax which requires residents in my bracket to pay 10% of their federal taxes to the state. 10% of $855 is $85.50. How long did it take you to write this story? Wyatt persisted. About a week, I said ungraciously. It was really more like two, with a couple of rewrites added in, but I wasn't going to tell Wyatt that. So you made $769.50 that week, he said. You know how much a plumber makes per week in New York, Steve-O? No, I said. I hate people who call me Steve-O. And neither do you. Sure I do, he said. About $769.50 after taxes. And so, as far as I can see, what you got there is a dead loss. He laughed like hell, and then asked if I had any more beer in the fridge. I said no. I'm going to send good buddy Wyatt a copy of this book with a little note. The note will say, I am not going to tell you how much I was paid for this book, but I'll tell you this, Wyatt. My total take on Word Processor of the Gods, net, is now just over $2,300, not even counting the $769.50 you hee-hawed so over at my house at the lake. I will sign the note Steve-O and add a P.S. There really was more beer in the fridge, and I drank it myself after you were gone that day. That ought to fix him. 2. Except it's not the money. I'll admit I was bowled over to be paid $2,000 for Word Processor of the Gods, but I was equally as bowled over to be paid $40 for The Reaper's Image when it was published in Startling Mystery Stories, or to be sent 12 contributors' copies when Here There Be Tigers was published in Hubris, the University of Maine College Literary Magazine. I am of a kindly nature, and have always assumed that hubris was a Cockney way of spelling hubris. I mean, you're glad of the money. Let us not descend into total fantasy here, or at least not yet. When I began to publish short fiction in men's magazines, such as Cavalier, Dude, and Adam, with some regularity, I was 25, and my wife was 23. We had one child, and another was on the way. I was working 50 or 60 hours a week in a laundry and making $1.75 an hour. Budget is not exactly the word for whatever it was we were on. It was more like a modified version of the Bataan Death March. The checks for those stories, on publication, never on acceptance, always seemed to come just in time to buy antibiotics for the baby's ear infection or to keep the telephone in the apartment for another record-breaking month. Money is, let us face it, very handy and very heady. As Lily Cavanaugh says in The Talisman, and it was Peter Straub's line, not mine, you can never be too thin or too rich. And if you don't believe it, you were never really fat or really poor. All the same, you don't do it for money, or you're a monkey. You don't think of the bottom line, or you're a monkey. You don't think of it in terms of hourly wage, yearly wage, even lifetime wage, or you're a monkey. In the end, you don't even do it for love, although it would be nice to think so. You do it because not to do it is suicide. And while that is tough, there are compensations. I could never tell Wyatt about, because he's not that kind of guy. Take Word Processor of the Gods as a for instance. Not the best story I ever wrote, not one that's ever going to win any prizes. But it's not too bad, either. Sort of fun. I had just gotten my own word processor a month before. It's a big wang, and keep your smart comments to yourself, what do you say? And I was still exploring what it could and couldn't do. In particular, I was fascinated with the insert and delete buttons, which make crossouts and carrots almost obsolete. I caught myself a nasty little bug one day. What the hell happens to the best of us? Everything inside me that wasn't nailed down came out from one end or the other, most of it at roughly the speed of sound. By nightfall, I felt very bad indeed. Chills, fever, joints full of spun glass. Most of the muscles in my stomach were sprung, and my back ached. I spent that night in the guest bedroom, which is only 4 running steps from the bathroom, and slept from 9 until about 2 in the morning. I woke up knowing that was it for the night. I only stayed in bed because I was too sick to get up. So there I lay, and I got thinking about my word processor and insert and delete. And I thought, wouldn't it be funny if this guy wrote a sentence, and then when he pushed delete, the subject of the sentence was deleted from the world? That's the way just about all of my stories start. Wouldn't it be funny if? And while many of them are scary, I never told one to people, as opposed to writing it down, that didn't cause at least some laughter, no matter what I saw as the final intent of that story. Anyway, I started imaging on delete to begin with, not exactly making up a story so much as seeing pictures in my head. I was watching this guy, who was always to me just the I guy, until the story actually starts coming out in words when you have to give him a name, delete pictures hanging on the wall and chairs in the living room and New York City and the concept of war. Then I thought of having him insert things and having those things just pop into the world. Then I thought, so, give him a wife that's bad to the bone, he can delete her, maybe, and someone else who's good to maybe insert. And then I fell asleep, and the next morning I was pretty much okay again. The bug went away. But the story didn't. I wrote it, and you'll see it didn't turn out exactly as the foregoing might suggest, but then they never do. I don't need to draw you a picture, do I? You don't do it for money. You do it because it saves you from feeling bad. A man or a woman able to turn his or her back on something like that is just a monkey, that's all. The story paid me by letting me get back to sleep when I felt as if I couldn't. I paid the story back by getting it concrete, which it wanted to be. The rest is just side effects. 3. I hope you'll like this book, constant reader. I suspect you won't like it as well as you would a novel, because most of you have forgotten the real pleasures of the short story. Reading a good long novel is in many ways like having a long and satisfying affair. I can remember commuting between Maine and Pittsburgh during the making of Creepshow, and going mostly by car because of my fear of flying, coupled with the air traffic controller's strike and Mr. Reagan's subsequent firing of the strikers. Reagan, it appears, is really only an ardent unionist if the unions in question are in Poland. I had a reading of The Thornbirds by Colleen McCullough on 8 cassette tapes, and for a space of about 5 weeks, I wasn't even having an affair with that novel. I felt married to it. My favorite part was when the wicked old lady rotted and sprouted maggots in about 16 hours. A short story is a different thing altogether. A short story is like a quick kiss in the dark from a stranger. That is not, of course, the same thing as an affair or a marriage, but kisses can be sweet, and their very brevity forms their own attraction. Writing short stories hasn't gotten easier for me over the years. It's gotten harder. The time to do them has shrunk, for one thing. They keep wanting to bloat, for another. I have a real problem with bloat. I write like fat ladies diet. And it seems harder to find the voice for these tales. All too often the eye guy just floats away. The thing to do is to keep trying, I think. It's better to keep kissing and get your face slapped a few times than it is to give up altogether. 4. All right, that's just about it from this end. Can I thank a few people? You can skip this part if you want to. Thanks to Bill Thompson for getting this going. He and I put Night Shift, the first book of short stories, together, and it was his idea to do this one. He's moved on to Arbor House since, but I love him just as well there as anywhere else. If there really is a gentleman left in the gentleman's profession of book publishing, it's this guy. God bless your Irish heart, Bill. Thanks to Phyllis Gran at Putnam for taking up the slack. Thanks to Kirby McCauley, my agent, another Irishman, who sold most of these and who pulled the longest of them, the mist, out of me with a chain fall. This is starting to sound like an Academy Awards acceptance speech, but fuck it. Thanks are due to magazine editors as well. Kathy Sagan at Redbook, Alice Turner at Playboy, Nye Wilden at Cavalier, the folks at Yankee, to Ed Furman, my man, at Fantasy and Science Fiction. I owe just about everybody, and I could name them, but I won't bore you with any more. Most thanks are to you, constant reader, just like always, because it all goes out to you in the end. Without you, it's a dead circuit. If any of these do it for you, take you away, get you over the boring lunch hour, the plane ride, or the hour in detention hall for throwing spitballs, that's the payback. 5. Okay, commercial's over. Grab onto my arm now. Hold tight. We are going to a number of dark places, but I think I know the way. Just don't let go of my arm. And if I should kiss you in the dark, it's no big deal. It's only because you are my love. Now, listen. April 15th, 1984, Bangor, Maine.